things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Jack G. from Huntington Beach.
Sorry. Drop. Still good. I just dropped my gum. I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you guys for having me, and it's nice. We got a lot of new people here, and I don't know. I never would know what to do. I've been sober almost 25 years, and this is still... I think my usefulness to Alcoholics Anonymous is getting... where I'm the best cigarette butt guy picker up you've ever seen, but the speaking thing I'm getting a little done with. But anyway, I love being sober, and I want to welcome our friends that said they were addicts. I heard an interesting thing. This friend of mine, Billy D., this old guy out of Boston, he said something that was funny. He said, son, he goes, let me tell you something. He goes, I'd much rather be sitting in the front row squirming around while you're up at the podium mentioning drugs than me being at the podium talking about booze while you're out there ripping off my apartment. And and I love that. Now that I have stuff, I'd rather you're in here. And but it does bring up an interesting thing. It's actually killed a lot of my friends. And I've had a lot of friends that are addicts that come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, it's real interesting. We can go to anywhere we want, and you're going to get a lot of opinion tonight also. And anyway, but we can go anywhere we want, any 12-step program in the world, and identify as long as they're not talking about the first step, which is real interesting to think about. I mean, I can go to a Dog Effers Anonymous meeting. As long as, you know, if they're talking about step four, I can sit with them and discuss a four step. I can talk about 11 step. I can talk about making amends. I can talk about all that stuff. But if the guy next to me starts talking about wanting to screw the collie next door, I'm out, man, because I don't get it. You know, it's like, hey, that dog never looked good to me once, champ. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it really is true, because when you come into AA, you come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're strictly an addict, the trouble is you don't hear your story. And that's the problem. So we lose that identification. And that was what they were so worried about, you know, because you come in here and if you're in a position of, I'm not like them, I'm not like them. And the same thing goes for people that are just hard drinkers or don't drink enough. You'll get those people come in and go, well, I'm not that bad. Or you'll get guys coming in here saying, I'm the worst of all alcoholics. Well, okay, you're worse than all us, champ. Whatever it is, it's crazy. So the same thing comes in here if you're just using a specific substance, and you come in here and you say, well, I shoot dope. You're not going to hear that story in here. You're going to hear alcoholism, because we're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that has killed a lot of my friends. And I'll tell you, I have begged my friends. I've said, please, man, we want you here. Stay here. We want you here. But please go and check out some NA meetings. Please go get involved. Please get around where you're going to hear your story, because you can die. And it's very frightening. And anyway, so like I said, I love being sober, and I love being here. And 25 years ago today, I was sober. I didn't stay, but I was sober, and I'll get into that in a minute. And you know, and real quick, I want to start with something also. I do this meeting on Saturday night, and it's up in Long Beach if you ever get a chance to come up. And what I do is I interview people with long periods of sobriety. And it's almost like an inside the actor's studio kind of thing. You know what I mean? Because I get these old guys and drag them up there, you know, and start grilling them about what they did, you know. And it's not really a speaker meeting. It's more like, hey, what did you struggle with? What did you go through? And we just had a great guy last Saturday, 38 years sober, and he was agnostic. Did not believe in any of this God mumbo jumbo. And the guy was still happy, still well-adjusted, still great. And the other thing I've really learned from that meeting is there are a legion of ways to work the program, a legion of ways to do it. We don't all do it exactly alike. And I used to be a book guy. I'm still a book guy. I do a book study at my house on Monday nights from 6 to 6:45. I shove that book one line at a time up people's asses, man, at my house. I figure, hey, if you're willing to come over, you're going to sit there and get it. And so that's what happens. And it's the kind of meeting where you can be there 1 week and you come back 2 months later and we've only moved one paragraph. You know, it's like, It's like that kind of meeting. Anyway, so I'm a book guy, right? So I'm sober for a while, and I start tearing the big book apart. I mean, tearing it apart. And I'm word for word, line for line, and I'm digging up history and hunting down people and doing all that crap. And I'm saying, I know where Bill stole this from, and this came from this, and this came from this. And then I started judging you guys. I started coming into meetings and going, that's wrong. He's wrong. That man's working his steps wrong. So, you know, I felt sorry for the guys that were sitting next to me in meetings because I'm grumbling through them. Oh, son of a bitch. You know, just grumbling through the meeting. One time this guy, I heard some guy say something crazy in the meeting. I came up to him. I go, where'd you get that, bro? He goes, I got that from my sponsor who got it from his sponsor. I go, yeah, well, then your grand sponsor's an asshole. So it got bad. And anyway, so it got real rough, and it got to be the point where it was Jack Grisham party of one at these meetings. So at the same time that's going on, I'm seeing this Jesuit brother. Because I want to hunt down God people, too. You know what I mean? I want to question God guys. And a lot of the God people, I couldn't, they're dead. You know what I mean? I can't talk to them. So I'm trying to find people that are still alive. And I get hooked up with this Jesuit brother. And I'm not Catholic. I'm no part of that. But I'm going to talk to this guy about God. Because once you get in the God world, it starts getting a little weird. You know what I mean? It gets a little weird. You can't just go wandering up to people on the street talking about God. I remember I saw this guy with a Bible one time, and I walk up, I go, hey, we got the same dad. Just like, he just moved away. You know, it's like, all right, we've just gone off the deep end here. And because we talk about God in here real calmly. You know, I mean, we talk about God like God and I are going up to the store kind of crap, you know. And people out there, they don't talk like that. You know, oh, God and I went over to the park today. That's like, yeah, all right, guys. Anyway, so I hook up with this Jesuit brother, and so he and I start talking about God stuff, right? And so after tearing the big book apart, I start tearing the New Testament apart, right? Line by line, word by word. And I come to Brother Charlie one day, I go, Brother Charlie, man, I go, what's the best translation of that New Testament? What's that best translation of that book? And I'm thinking he's going to say, hey, Jack, why don't you go study Aramaic or something, whatever it is. And I'm in. I'm rolling on it, right? And he looks at me, he goes, man, he goes, Jack, he goes, it is such a shame that you're that hung up on the words. I go, what? Because I'm thinking he's going to throw scripture at me or something. You know what I mean? He goes, you know what? I don't want to hear another word of scripture coming out of your mouth. He goes, what I want you to do is I want you to go down to the beach. And I want you to just take a walk, and I want you to ask God to come with you, and I want you to shut up. And I said, okay. And so I did it. So I started going down to the beach, and I started taking this walk, and I just sit there calmly. And at the start of the walk, I say, hey, you know, come on, will you go with me? And just take this walk. And through this walk, I started thinking about God, thinking about what's happening. And I had a realization. What I realized was, by trying to tear apart the big book by line, by definitions, by all these words, what I was basically doing was trying to control the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I could pin you guys down to a word or a phrase, then I basically controlled the program. And then I also looked, and my God at the time, being a Christian, my God at the time, what I was doing by tearing apart that New Testament was, I was trying to control God. If I could control my God down to a line or a phrase, then I basically controlled it. I took a break, and I went back and took another look at that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you will hear people around here talking about that book like it is a very rigid book. And I was one of those guys, a very rigid alcoholic. I looked back at that big book that I thought was so rigid, and even started with the third step prayer. And when you come in here, your sponsor will say, learn that prayer, learn that third step prayer line by line. It's a great prayer. It is a great prayer. But do you know what it says at the end of the book, at the end of the third step prayer? It says the wording is optional. Optional. You can say anything you want as a third step prayer. Some people's third step prayer is, F it, I can't take this anymore. That is a very valid prayer. And I've actually seen more of those guys stay sober than the other ones, you know. The other guys just say, I don't even know what's going on, I just can't do it anymore, I quit. Those guys stay a long time around here. And then in the big book, you move into the fourth step, and you know, the lines, the columns, and all this stuff all laid out. Do you know what it says before the fourth step, before the lines and the columns? It says, we were usually as definite as this example. Usually. Usually doesn't mean always. It means sometimes we do things other ways. And as a matter of fact, there's a great fourth step in the back of the book. And I was so glad that they didn't take this story out when they changed the book around. And the story is this guy does a four-step with Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob's four-step is completely different than the Bill's four-step in the book. Dr. Bob's four-step is he listened to the guy talk, and then he wrote down his defects and said, here you go, buddy. This is what you're about. And I'll tell you, if you want to do a four-step, great. You want to get pad and paper, you want to do a four-step, that's great. I'm stoked on your willingness. Wonderful. You want to do a real four-step? Give pad and paper to everyone that knows you. And let them fill it out. Because I guarantee you're going to find a whole new list of defects that you did not even know you had. And if you want to go even farther, give pad and paper to your enemies and get them to fill it out. Some of us aren't even willing to go that far. Do you know, sometimes when I'm sitting around at home, I'll type in F-U-C-K-A-A on the computer and just press enter. Because I want to find out what they say about us. It's crazy that we won't look at our detractors and say, why do they not like us? Why do they not care about us? And I'll tell you, you punch that in and you watch what comes up in AA. Do you know that nobody's mad about us paying our debts off? Nobody's mad about us saying you can believe however you want? Nobody's mad about us clearing our wrongs, admitting our faults? You will not see one complaint on the internet about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. What you'll see is about us. They complain about us, how we are as people and how we treat others around here. That's what they complain about. Anyway, so once I looked at that thing, the whole book completely fell apart. It fell apart and it became completely wide open, completely unrigid in any way. And I really started looking at what we're doing here. What are we even doing in AA? You know, what are we doing? What are the steps for? You know, they talk about the steps that they in the book, they say, hey, your guy might not even want to do all this stuff. Because it's up to him whether he wants to connect with God or the Spirit or this power or not. It's up to him, not up to you. And it's really about connecting with that power and how different it all is. And if we look at the end of the big book is loaded with a bunch of different stories. Not one story. A bunch of different stories. Because they weren't as concerned as much with the words as they were with the experience. They wanted to know how you connected to this God, what happened. Anyway, real quick, when I got here, I was living at my mother's house. And if it was up to my mother, I would still be living at my mother's house right now. The Al-Anon people never got one hand on my mom, man. You know what I mean? The blood of the lamb was spray painted on our front door, and the Al-Anons just drifted right on by. I mean, I had the best, man. Charles met my mom. I mean, I had the kind of mom where I would go to jail, and when I'd get out, my mother would go, they're always picking on you, sweetheart. I'd be in the neighbor's yard, passed out with my pants down any time there the night. And if the neighbors had enough balls to wander over and complain, my mother would go, leave him alone, he's an artist. Just out there and out. Anyway. And it's still like that. My mother's still like that. And nothing has changed with this woman. My daughter, real quick, I'll tell you a quick story. I got a 13-year-old daughter, cute little baby girl who actually just kicked your guy's ass in volleyball up here. But anyway, so, but cute little baby girl, right? Just a gorgeous little beachy girl, right? And she's on probation right now. And it was funny because she came to me after getting this incident. She goes, Pops, I got something I got to tell you about. Now, what's up, sweetheart? She goes, I toilet papered the house last night. She goes, I don't feel too good about it. I go, oh, cool. Hey, thanks for telling me. What do you want me to do about it? You know, and she goes, you know, I just want to let you know. I go, oh, that's great, sweetheart. Why'd you do it? She goes, the lady was against solar power, so we did her house. I go, oh, cool, great, good for you. I go, good for you. Thanks for telling me you're a good citizen. That's great. All right, so she wanders off. A couple hours later, I get a call from her mother. She goes, you got to go to parenting class. What? For what? She goes, your daughter's on probation. They want you at a parenting class. I'm like, really? For toilet papering? You got to be kidding me. So I got to go to this four-hour parenting class, right? I run this parenting class, and then I'm pissed. So I want to talk to the detective in charge, right? You know, so I call this detective and set up this appointment because I'm a taxpayer, and this is furious. So anyway, I'm not really a taxpayer, but I But I feel like one. So anyway, so So I'm sitting with this detective, right, and I just go off on him, right? The minute we sit down, I got baby girl next to me. The minute we sit down, I just start launching in. Are you kidding me? This little baby girl, toilet paper in the house, you got this. What are you people doing over here? You know, just going off. And the guy looks at me and says, what do you know about the case? I go, the case? He goes, that's what I thought. And he pulls out this folder, right? And he turns it around and pushes it at me. And I open it up, and the very first page is a picture of a poorly drawn penis in magic marker on the wall of this house. And it says, suck my thing, right there. And I look at my kid, man, and the only reason she didn't get a spanking is it was because it was a poorly drawn penis. It looked like a beach ball with a triangle on top of it. And I could tell she had never actually seen one. But the whole point of this story, the bottom line is, I'm having lunch with my mother, and I tell my mother this story. I go, Mom, they drew all over the house, they egged the place, they cussed on it, they wrote magic marker. And my mom goes, oh, they're just kids having a good time. I go, Mom, they defaced the house. She goes, yeah, it's Halloween. Come on. So she has not changed. Anyway, all right. So I'm living in my mom's. Craziness is going on. And here's how I got to you guys. Here's how I ended up here. A buddy of mine got busted on a cocaine trafficking charge. And he goes to court. And he gets arrested and he goes to court. Now, I believe that more alcoholics are created in court than anywhere else in the world, right? It's not the local bar, it's not the first drink, it's court, man, it's court. Because hundreds of thousands of us go into court every day, non-alcoholic. And we come in front of the judge. Judge says, Mr. Smith, you're looking at a year's sentence. But if you're an alcoholic, you could do a 90-day treatment program. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic, Your Honor. All of a sudden, everybody is now, right? Not so. Not so. If you're brand new in here, I'm going to do you a favor because I'm your friend, man. If you're brand new in here and you're just saying stuff to get us to like you, quit now. Quit now. Because we know you're lying. We already know you're lying. And second of all, we got to like you anyway. Because that's our code. We have to like you. I mean, you could basically go into any AA meeting around here, stand up in the room, flip us all off, tell us to go down and flip us all off, and we'll clap and tell you to keep coming back. And I'll tell you what, so you might as well just start telling us the truth now about how unhappy you are to be here. And the other reason is, no matter what you say in AA, somebody will disagree with you. I don't know if you're aware of that. No matter what you say, you could stand up here at the podium and say, the ocean is wet. Somebody else will stand up and go, not along the edge, it's not. No, sir. Oh, it's not. So I said that one time, that little joke about more alcoholics being created in court. And it is a joke, but it's kind of a true joke. You know, I mean, that's why it's funny. I said that at this meeting one time, and this dude comes up to me, and I'm 6'4", right? And the guy comes up to me, huge, towering over me, covered with bad tattoos. He goes, can I talk to you, man? Yeah, what's up, bro? He goes, I did the year, dog. Well, then you're a stupid alcoholic. Like, hey, man, if you don't got enough sense to come up in here and cop a plea to stay out of jail, bro, you better get a sponsor and stay, man, because you're going to die out there, my friend. Anyway, so that's what my buddy does. He goes to court and says he's got a problem. He did not have a problem 2 weeks before that. I was getting loaded with him. Do you know what I mean? There was no problem mentioned. It wasn't like, oh, Jack, you know what? I think I got a problem. Why don't you clean up that last line of blow for us? No, it was like, no. It was, are you cutting that even, dog? There was no problem mentioned. But now, because he's going to court, and he's about 5'6", curly, blonde-haired, little freckled-faced surfer boy living in Long Beach, going to court, getting stuck up in L.A. County, yes, now he does have a problem. So he goes to treatment. And UH&I guys get healing on him, or whatever the hell you guys are doing up in there on those people. Get them all healed up and pumped full of the spirit, right? Get them all well, and they kick him loose, and he comes back as a reformer. A reformer. The big book says we're not supposed to start out as reformers, but that's what this guy is. And since I mentioned the big book, does anyone got one in here? Not in here. Does anyone got one in here? Can I borrow it real quick?
Oh, sure.
Thank you very much. Just for a second.
A lot of people don't realize also that Alcoholics Anonymous started out as a bit of a scam. Are you aware of that too? I mean, they were hustlers. The guys that did this program, they were hustlers, stockbrokers, hustlers, and they wanted to sell this. Like, they thought, oh, we'll sell this to companies and make tons of money. That was the plan, right? But they couldn't do it. Nobody wants it, so we got to give it away. But it's, but they wanted to sell it. And so I'm going through the book one time, and I'm thinking about these guys wanting to sell the program, and I actually found the pitch of the program. You know, like when they do sales pitches on TV, have you ever seen that? Sorry, I'm shitty at this, but... Okay, here we go. You ever see when they do like a sales pitch on TV and then they're like doing Viagra or whatever, you know, hair or whatever, and they make it all nice, right? So I found the sales pitch in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so here it is. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Isn't that nice? It's so nice. Yeah, so that's the pitch, right? So then I'm thinking, okay, great, great, great. So I found the pitch. So what always comes after the pitch? Like at the end. You know, I mean, the end of the commercial, when they start rolling credits real quick, and they give, like, the warning at the end. So then I find the warning 3 pages later. Here it goes. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, greater interference with your pleasures, interruption to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash your furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. So anyway, yeah, that's rough. Yeah, so next time your sponsor says, hey, read the book. Oh, yeah, give me the book. I'll read it. So, cause there's all sorts of crap. I'm not going to tell you what page. You've got to find it yourself. Anyway. So now my buddy comes back, and he's going to save the neighborhood, right? So where does he go to first? He goes to my mother's house, stop number one, right? And I get this. I go, hey, hey, hey. I go, what's up, bro? He goes, you got a problem, man. I go, what? I go, you got the problem, champ. I saw you go down. He goes, you're an alcoholic. I go, no, I'm not. Live with my mom. So, yeah, let me tell you what was going on at mommy's house at the time. I had warrants out for my arrest. So what? I always have warrants out for my arrest. That's how you pay tickets. Yeah. That is so sad that you guys laughed at that. Anyway, you tell that to a normie and they just look at you. They don't get that. So, anyway, so I got warrants out for my arrest. Big deal. I also had people trying to kill me, both real and imagined. I got both sides, right? I get a girl pregnant. She's one of the many women that I'm seeing at the time. I get her pregnant. I said, move in. Move into my mom's house with me. Let's have a baby. Move in, right? I move her in. At the same time I move her in, I fall in love with a girl of questionable age, and I take her to Mexico and marry her. That's what's going on. Yeah, that's where the laughter stops, man. That's what's going on at mommy's house. And this guy's telling me I got a problem. He goes, you're an alcoholic. I go, nah. And I get him away from the front door. I don't want my mother hearing that kind of talk up there. I get him outside. He goes, come to a meeting with me. I go, a meeting? A meeting of what? He goes, 12-step meeting. Come on down. I go, no, bro. You go. He goes, come to a meeting. I go, no, man. He goes, come to me. No. Come to me. No. Come to me. No. Come to a meeting. 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 No. Come on, come to a meeting. Okay, I'll go. Now, do you know why I said I'll go? It's because I'm an alcoholic. And I'll say anything to get you to leave me alone. Including
I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. I got a problem with Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a whole bunch of problems with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm still sober. And the problems, like I said before, are not with the book, not with the steps. It's with us. With us. And one of the problems I have about Alcoholics Anonymous is we are too quick to get the new man and the new woman to say they're an alcoholic. And you have people claiming alcoholism, and they don't even know what they're saying. And we push them into it. Say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. Say, don't say addict, goddammit. Say you're an alcoholic. And we push them, push them, push them into it. And have you ever been to a meeting where they go around the room and introduce themselves before the meeting starts? The guy's there on a court card. I'm Bud, alcoholic. I'm Tom, alcoholic. I'm Jay, alcoholic. I'm Frank. I'm here on a court card. Woo! The whole room goes crazy. Like a bunch of monkeys let out of a cage. Right? We got one. We got one. We got one. He's going nuts, man. And then when the meeting starts, the whole meeting is dedicated to Frank and his denial. I remember when I, too, came in on a court card. Frank. Unbelievable. The poor guy's not even alcoholic. He was shooting golf. He shot a bad round. He went to the clubhouse, had a couple of cocktails, pulled out and got popped. He got a 502, and Frank was smart enough to tell the judge he belonged in here. And they sent him here to get his court card signed. Not an alcoholic. Just drank too much, got popped, ended up in here. Real quick, being brand new coming in here, you can run yourself out by listening to the crap in these rooms. And some of the stuff you can run yourself out in is listening to the amounts that people drank. People will come in here and go, I used to drink this, I used to drink this. I mean, it's crazy. You go to meetings and a guy will say, I used to get up at 6:55 a.m. Before 7 a.m., I'm drinking 5/5 of booze. And defecated in my pants. And then you get some other idiot, stands up and goes, is that all? It's crazy. It's crazy. Listening to the amount is not. Real quick. We could, if I had some cash on me, I don't, and but if I did, we could go downtown and catch a normie around here. We could do a little experiment, field trip, AA field trip, right? Borrow one of the church's buses, go on a field trip, man, and we could catch a normie, and we could take his keys from him, and we could pour some booze down his throat, like pour a fifth down his throat, and then just sit back and watch and see what happens. I'm going to tell you, guaranteed what's going to happen. The first thing that's going to happen is he's going to start loosening up the clothes. You know what I mean? Because when you get a couple of cocktails, your clothes start getting tight. You got to start loosening them up, right? And we got his keys, so he's got to walk. And he is going to urinate in his pants, man. He's got a fist in him. He's going to urinate in his pants. And let me tell you something, those pants are going to come off. Because walking long distances in wet pants means chafing. And chafing's no good anyway. So those pants are going to come off. So now he doesn't got no pants on. And he's walking home. And on his way home, he's going to remember that he forgot something at the market. So he's going to swing in to get it. And he's going to get arrested. Because guaranteed, even in San Clemente, you can't shop with your britches off. It's going to happen. You're going to get popped. And he's going to go to court. But it does not make him an alcoholic. It just means you drank too much. That's all it means. He just drank too much. But it does not make him an alcoholic. The other thing about admitting you're an alcoholic, when you come in here and you admit you got alcohol, you say, I'm an alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what you're claiming? You're claiming a fatal illness. I mean, a fatal illness. If you look at our book, look through the literature, they talk about it being a fatal illness. Fatal means it's going to kill you. It's going to kill you. And not only is it a fatal illness, if you're looking in our book, I mean, you're sitting in an AA meeting, saying you're an alcoholic, sitting in here, not only is it a fatal illness, but it's a fatal illness that only a spiritual experience can arrest. Do you know how frightening that is? Could you imagine going to a doctor and giving tests? You give all your tests to the doctor and then you roll back in 3 days later and say, hey, how'd it go, man? He goes, no. What do you mean, no? Fatal. What? Fatal. You don't even have to pay your bill. Fatal. Oh, what? Fatal. And I don't really believe in God, but I favor prayer in cases such as yours. That's frightening. But do you know there's a story in the big book that says that? And it's in the front of the book. I'm not talking hidden story in the back. It's in the front. The doctor says, hey, I don't even like treating people like you. And though not a religious man, I favor prayer. That is frightening. So basically, if you're brand new in here saying you're an alcoholic, what you're basically saying is, I got a gun against my head. Trigger's cocked. Bullet's in the chamber. This gun's going to fire, and the only person that can stop this gun from firing is God, and I'm not connected to it. That is frightening. And yet you'll see the same people do nothing about it. Nothing about it. I've been shot at before, as I'm sure you can imagine. And let me tell you something. When you're getting shot at, I don't care who's around you. The toughest guys are around you. But when you get shot at, everybody ducks, right? Everybody's on the ground, and their voices go up like 2 octaves. Did you see where he's shooting from? Whatever. The voice. Then after the guy drives off, they get up and go, I would have kicked his ass, man. You know, but when the shooting's going on, everybody's on the ground, ducking. They're all ducking. Everybody, look around. Everybody's laying there. It happened one time, I was laughing at the guy next to me because I'm look at him laying there. Anyway, but the bottom line is, so you come in here brand new and you say you got this fatal illness, they're going to die, and you say you got to be connected with God, but there's no connection, and you're not ducking. You're not ducking. Not grabbing a sponsor, not getting a commitment, not doing the book, not doing anything. You're not even ducking. You just walk in here and say, hey, I'm dying. And then you laugh and have a smoke. Crazy. Crazy. Because we don't really believe we're alcoholics. A lot of us, the new people, they don't really believe they're here. You know, when you try to convince them to believe, you ever try to convince a guy that he's got alcoholism? You know, it's crazy. It's like I sat with a guy one time. I go, dude, it's like you're in a cage with a hungry tiger. He goes, yes, Jack, I'm in a cage with a hungry tiger. No! Yeah, hungry tiger locked in the cage. Yes, I'm locked in the cage with a very hungry tiger. Can we move on with this? Anyway, crazy. All right, anyway. So I tell this guy I'll go to the meeting with him. Fine, I'll go to the meeting. And after walking, you just got an ADD swing with me when I swing. I'm in front of my mother's house. I just told the guy I'm going to go to the meeting. I told him I'll go to the meeting. I turn around. I start to walk back in the house. And I have a moment of clarity. And I think, how often have I been loaded lately? I thought, every day. Every day. This guy's calling me an alcoholic. I'm thinking, God, I've been loaded every day. I've been drinking booze, smoking weed, taking pills, whipping cocaine, whipping a little Pam. Every day for as long as I can remember. And I woke up just a little bit. And thank God it was only just a little bit. I couldn't imagine if you woke up completely your first day in AA. Do you know how frightening that would be? Be like, yeah, we got cookie, coffee, and rope for the new man. You can hang yourself now or go one more day, champ. Whatever you want to do around here. Yeah. I mean, because when you really wake up to this, it's frightening. And there's a lot of people that are still not awake. You see them around here. You will see them. Years of sobriety, still not awake. Still not awake to what went down here. Have you ever heard someone say, I paid for my seat here? I don't know where that started, but you hear, I paid for my seat here. Really? You paid for your seat. Let's call your wife. Ask her what she paid. Let's call your parents. Call your kids. Let's call your husband. Let's call anyone that ever loved and cared for you and ask them what they paid for your seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you will find that they paid dearly. Great letter Bill Wilson wrote. He said, we're so quick to talk about what ass kickers we all are, but we're not as quick to talk about the damage we have done to those that love us. You see people in here still asleep. Still asleep. Anyway, I woke up enough to see the drinking or using. I said, you got it. I'll go to the meeting. I went to the meeting. The meeting I went to was the Rap Center in downtown Long Beach. Kind of meeting where you push your shopping cart up out front and go inside. You know, if a girl had most her teeth, I was stoked. It was one of those meetings, you know. And I mean, mine are all missing too. So not like I'm coming on high. And my mother gave me some money for the meeting. She found out I was going. She found out I was going. She's like, are you going to that A&A, sweetheart? I go, yes, I am, mother. She goes, do you want a couple dollars for coffee? I go, I need 40. They got dues down there, Mom. Anyway, and here's how I roll into my very first meeting. First meeting, right? I got money from my mother in my pocket, so I'm rolling large. I got some cash on me, right? Here's how I roll in. I got shorts. It's a night meeting. I'm wearing a pair of shorts, right? Just ragged old shorts. And I actually still have a piece of these shorts. I was going through clothes, and I found them. I thought, oh, my God, those are them. And I cut out a square and kept it, right? So I got a pair of ragged shorts on. I got a Dickies work shirt with cigarette burn holes all over the top of it, right? Because I'd just be smoking and just hammered, and then I got to say something to you. So I can put my smoke down for a minute. I have people coming up to me going, dude, you're fucking on fire, man. No, no, you're on fire, asshole. just out there, right? So I did have nice shoes on. My friend invited me to the wedding. I kept the shoes, right? So I got these shiny black patent leather shoes on. And my hair at the time is down to my elbows and full of knots. Little do I know, I got a Jolly Rancher in the back of my hair. It's like every year for my birthday, people give me cans of Pam and Jolly Ranchers. Anyway, so that's how I roll in. But I don't know the ranchers back there right now. And so I'm solid. I roll into my first meeting, total mess, living up with my mom's, worn out from my arrest. Whatever career I have is gone. Everything's destroyed. I wander in this meeting, loser. Yep, scumbag. Yep, know that dude from school. Yep, and I'm not like you. And let me tell you why I'm not like you. Because I'm a smooth drunk. I'm a Cary Grant drunk. That's what I am. I start drinking, and the first place it hits me is right in the cheeks. And they get all tingly, tingly right across the top, and I start smiling. A couple more drinks, I smile even bigger. A couple more drinks, and all of a sudden I want to wrestle you. A couple more drinks, I decide to take a walk. It's night. I head down the street. I see a light on. So I come up and knock on the door. Hey! Got a light on! Who are you? What are you doing in there? It's like that. I'm a visiting drunk guy, is what I am. Anyway, and what I heard in this meeting, it's so sad, but what I heard in my first meeting is I heard pride. Pride. Do you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place besides prison where people try to be the worst? Are you aware of that? I mean, people in here wear the word homeless like a badge. I was homeless. People in here wear the word convict like a badge. I've been arrested 187 times, dog. Crazy. It's like, well, go for 188, champ. It's unbelievable, and it kills people, and it hurts them. Real quick, for the guys that have been arrested a whole bunch of times, we need you in here, but not why you think we need you. We need you so when the next person comes walking through the door and says, I've been arrested 187 times, you walk up and go, yeah, me too. Let me tell you where my alcoholism took me. And you share your story. But you know who else we need in here? We need the people that haven't been arrested one time. Not one arrest. So when that person comes through the door and says, but I've never been arrested. You walk up and go, yeah, neither have I. And you share your story. One's useful to God and our fellows. The other one's useful to nothing but our egos. Big difference. Anyway, I only got a couple of minutes here. So I'm in that meeting and I diagnose myself non-alcoholic. I'm not like you guys. Boom. And you want to know what? Do you know that I've never seen someone come in here and pick out the most well-to-do one of us, the most well-spoken, well-dressed, successful one of us, and go, God, I'm not that good. I think I'll stay. People always walk in here and they look for the worst. The worst guy all torn up and go, I'm not that bad. I'm out of here. But they never go the good. Anyway, whatever. It's just an insurance observation. So, all right. So I leave that meeting and I try to stop. And I stopped on my own a bunch of times. I was always stop and starting. On October 1st of 1988, I stopped. I stopped. And I was sober for 30 days. 30 solid days. No meetings, no drugs, no God, nothing. 30 solid days. On my 30th day, I got a job as a bartender. Because I thought that would be a good job. And you know what? If you have worked a proper first step, being a bartender is an excellent job. It's a wonderful job. Lots of our members are bartenders. If you have worked a first step. If you haven't worked a first step, you can't even get a job in a market putting bread on the shelves. Because you will get drunk. You'll get people in here, they blame drunkenness on all sorts of crap. I got in a bad relationship, so I got drunk. Come on! AA is loaded with bad relationships. And we're not all drunk. I made a bad decision, I got drunk. No, you got drunk because you thought you could get away with it again. You thought you could drink with impunity. You thought you could get done, that you could get it in you and it wasn't going to hurt you. That's why you got drunk. Anyway, I got 30 days, I got a job as a bartender. On my way to work, I stopped by a friend's house to pick up some mushrooms for another friend. I was being of service at the time. He goes, Jack, how's it going? I go, Lester, it's going good, man. I go, everything's good, man. I'm solid. I got 30 days. Everything's good. Mom's good. Underage girl's good. She moved out. Baby's good. Everything's solid. I'm good. Is that your bong? Bam. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, alcohol disguised itself as a skunk bud and hid in this dude's bong. Anyway, I love that. Because the old guys go, is he talking about drugs? No, sorry, I'm not. Anyway. So I take a bong hit, and I come to with the bong in my mouth. Do you know it talks about that in the big book? It does not say the word bong. You will not find the word bong in the big book. But what it does say that's even more frightening It says, strange mental blank spots while sober. Not drunken blackouts. Big deal, you blacked out drunk. Look how much you drank. Of course you blacked out. Blackout sober. Where all of a sudden you shut down and all of a sudden you find yourself with a drink in your hand and you have no idea how it got in your hand. And that's what happened to me. I came to with that bong in my mouth and I thought, oh my God, I just took a bong hit. Now what? I'm not going back to AA on one bong hit. You know what I mean? Oh yeah, I took a bong hit. I surrender. I'll be GSR. I don't think like that. Because that's a real commitment, man. Anyway, I don't think like that. I think, no, whoa, whoa. Yeah, you took a bong hit, but you overreacted, and you had 30 days, and anybody that can get 30 days definitely does not have a problem, and I'm starting to get a little dry from this weed. So I need a little drinky poo to wash it down. So now I'm drinking and smoking weed, so these mushrooms are surely not going to get delivered. Anyway, so I go to work and I'm fired. Half an hour of my first day, I'm fired. I'm downtown Long Beach. I'm on the street staggering around. And one of you guys sees me and comes up. And he's an AANA guy and he sees me. And he goes, Jack, how's it going? I go, dude, take me to my mom's house, man. I'm losing it. I was 5 grams into a very bad night by that time. I said, hey, I'm losing it. He takes me home. When he drops me off at home, he says, we'll talk tomorrow, 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 tomorrow. I said, dude, all right, we'll talk tomorrow. Now, I know what we'll talk tomorrow means. We'll talk tomorrow is code word for lecture. It means, dude, you're too drunk to yell at right now. I'll come back and yell at you tomorrow. Like, have you ever seen two drunks? That's why in the big book they say, don't deal with them drunk, man. Wait till they're sober, then deal with them. Have you ever seen two drunks trying to help each other? It's great. They talk a different language, man. And the other one goes, yeah. And then they just, whoa. You don't even know what they're saying, but they sure do. Anyway, so I know what it means. It means you're going to get yelled at. Now, the next day comes, and he and I are talking on the phone, and we're talking nice. And he says, I'm waiting for him to bring up something about me being loaded. He didn't say nothing. I bring it up. I go, dude, man. I go, I was hammered last night, huh, bro? He goes, yep. I go, hey. Woo. I go, last night, huh, bro? He goes, yep. What I was waiting for is, Jack, you're a loser. Jack, you're a scumbag. Jack, you're an animal. I'm waiting for it. Loser, scumbag, animal, sociopath. I've heard it all my life. And I'm waiting to hear it from this guy because he's a we don't drink and we don't do any drugs AA guy either. He's seen me coming in, out, taking a dump on his steps, on his tradition, just done with the whole thing. I'm waiting to get yelled at and it ain't coming. I go, dude, I blew 30 days, man. I go, I got drunk. I lost my job. He goes, Jack, I know. He goes, you know what? He goes, you're probably an alcoholic. And if you're an alcoholic, you can't stop drinking. And if you do stop, you can't stay stopped for any length of time on your own power. I wish that guy was still here, but on November 13th, 2 weeks after I relapsed, he relapsed and he died. That man's name was Don Langston. On my 15th year of sobriety, I laid my chip on his grave. Looked down at the headstone, never realized it before, but he was only 21 years old when he died. Like I said, I got sober on January 8th of 1989. I've been sober ever since, and I learned something from that, and this is the most important thing I think I've learned. There's a definition of what it is to be like, what it is to be an alcoholic in our big book, and it's in chapter 4, line 4, page 44. And it says, when you stop drinking, can you quit entirely? Entirely. Can you stay stopped when you stop? And when you are drinking, how's the control thing going for you? Do you know it says nothing about going to jail, nothing about losing a family, nothing about losing a job. It says if you stop, why couldn't you stay stopped? It's not the amount we drink. It's the fact that we can't stay stopped, that it's hurting us. It's not the amount. There is no difference between a housewife that has 3 glasses of wine every day, and on Tuesday, the kids come home and say, Mom, please don't do it again. Please don't do it. We don't like you when you're doing that. And she looks at those babies with all the love in her heart and says, sweetheart, I swear to God, I won't. The next day comes, she does it again. There is no difference between that woman and a bum laying in an alley sucking on a short dog with crap in his pants. It is the same exact illness. Anyway, I love being sober. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I don't think like I used to do. I don't act like I used to do. I've recovered from that, and I spend my whole life study on this. So anyway, I just want to thank you guys for having me on.